We are continuing our story on Naga Awani, taking over from my colleague Haris Ashraf Hasnan. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're going to be talking about ESG. The country's top 30 companies that form the flagship FTSE Bursa Malaysia FBM KLCI index are lacking depth and detail in environmental, social and governance reporting, or ESG reporting. In disclosing this, Global ESG Monitor, or GEM, said Malaysian companies used internationally recognized frameworks, standards and strategic tools in their ESG reporting, but lacked the appropriate content and level of detail needed for optimal transparency. Thus, they ranked in the midfield among global and regional peers. GEM co-founder Michael Diegelman said FBM KLCI inclusion in GEM 2022 reflected the country's commitment to transparency and sustainability practices of business. And Diegelman said that with an average score of 54 out of 100 points, the Malaysian index ranks joint fifth place alongside the Dow Jones among the 10 indices surveyed. This positions the FBM KLCI ahead of the S&P 50 USA, AXX 50 and WIG 20 and BET 20. But above FBM KLCI is ranked S&P Asia, Hang Seng, Euro Stocks and DAX. All this is higher than FBM KLCI. He also said that the FBM KLCI's ranking showcases progress in sustainability, but also highlights the deeper need for more detailed ESG reporting in the country. The GEM 2022 analysed the transparency of non-financial ESG data of 625 ESG reports from 350 companies listed on 10 of the world's largest stock market indices on four continents. The ranking is based on the degree of transparency in reporting on ESG strategy, materiality and disclosure of indicators and not their overall performance on such matrices. So joining us is former MP and current director of Philosophy, Politics and Economics, or PPE program at Taylor's University, Dr. Ong Kian Ming. Kian Ming, maybe you can talk to us in terms of how you think GEM 2022 report is going to impact Malaysian companies. Do you feel that Malaysian companies are actually sitting up straight in their chairs and trying to understand a little bit better on how best to improve on their ESG reporting? Or do you feel that this is one of those things that is a checklist and, you know, we just report it and eventually somebody will pick it up?
Good morning, Ibrahim. Thanks for inviting me to share my thoughts on this important issue. I think the Global ESG Monitor report for Malaysia is an important contribution to the larger ESG reporting ecosystem in Malaysia. Like you said, it is focusing on the transparency of the disclosures, not necessarily measuring the effectiveness of those ESG initiatives itself. And I think it would be a good reference point for companies to look at their current disclosure standards and to see how they can further improve on this. So it is a journey. It was stated yesterday as well during the launch, and I do very much agree that many Malaysian companies are on the upward trajectory in terms of this journey, although there are areas of concern that we can address.
The idea here is, of course, on the investors and stakeholders, whether or not they actually care for ESG reporting. That is one of the defining factors on how they can actually discipline a particular company or a corporate in improving their ESG practices and ESG reporting. Do you feel that the investment community and, of course, stakeholders in Malaysia are actually quite concerned or even interested in Malaysian companies in pursuing ESG policies from these corporates? Or do you feel that the corporates must, I guess, self-influence themselves or self-regulate for better ESG reporting?
I think just like I said, you know, with regards to the journey that companies are taking, I think even the stakeholders, including investors, are also undertaking this journey in terms of what they are looking for with regards to disclosure, not just from a sort of like a number standpoint, but also from a transparency standpoint. And I think this is where some of the companies in Malaysia, although have done well, can do more, especially in terms of assuaging investors of the possible pain points that have not been covered before, now they are covering. So one example is, I think the ESG monitor highlighted the fact that only 27% of the companies disclose steps that they have taken and are taking to prevent the occurrence of child as well as forced labor abuses. So we saw this coming into play during the pandemic, with some companies in Malaysia being sanctioned by countries in the US, US, EU for labor violations. So I think this is one way in which companies in Malaysia can benefit from a greater disclosure, and then also investors also can benefit from a greater disclosure in this area.
Okay, one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on this morning is because you were a former policymaker. You do discuss politics and economics at large, and of course, being the director of PPE program at TELUS University, policy and regulation is also a key feature on this. Two areas that I want to explore. Let's start with the first one, regulatory requirements. Right now, Bursa Malaysia is actually quite aggressive on ESG. They've launched the initiative of Bursa Sustain. They've also improved on the sustainability reporting guide. They've also launched ESG services, advisory services. And of course, very recently on 16th of March, they launched the carbon trading auction. But so far, it's more of great encouragement coming in from Bursa, not necessarily imposing these kind of requirements on these corporates. Do you feel that we have to now no longer encourage, but rather impose on ESG practices? Do you think that is the way to go when it comes to regulatory practices? Practices?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think what you talked about, the carbon disclosures would be one very salient example. So in the GEM report, it was stated that only 30% of the 30 companies in FBM PLCI identified their most important sources of emissions, even though they sort of like made general statements and disclosed numbers with regards to their overall carbon emissions. So I think this is one area where, with a proper functioning carbon trading market, one that is not just voluntary, but one that is made compulsory and also governed by federal regulations and legislation, this can actually incentivize more companies, not just the top 30 companies, but all the listed companies and also non-listed ones to measure their own carbon emissions, and then also use this as a form of monetizing perhaps.
Hello?
Okay.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
We still have you. No problems. We have some technical difficulties there. Qian Ming, maybe you can go on. We lost you about 1 minute ago or 30 seconds ago. Can you restart?
Yeah. So what I said just now was that only 30% of the top 30 companies had identified their most important sources of carbon emissions and also to outline which challenges they have had to face with regards to these climate relevant emissions. So I think one thing that would be good for the government to consider would be to introduce actual disclosure standards so that we can create a carbon trading mechanism and market whereby not just top 30 companies, but all listed companies, even some non-listed ones, can get onto this market and maybe even monetize some of their carbon credits that they may get as a result better disclosure.
Actually, that's a good point, because when we talk about regulatory requirements, it does impact only listed companies. In conjunction with Bursa Malaysia's efforts, Securities Commission is also doing that as well. The Corporate Governance Strategic Priorities of 2021 to 2023 does outline strengthening ESG fitness and disclosure. There's also a guidance on managing ESG risk for FMCs that was issued by Securities Commission. But this does impact just less than 5% of the total corporates in Malaysia. 95% of the corporates in Malaysia or SMEs and micro-SMEs perhaps can actually embrace this. Do you feel that the ideas that needs to be done, particularly by the Ministry of the Natural Resources, Environment and Climate Change, needs to do more when it comes to providing not just the guidelines but also requirements for companies to disclose this? We know that financial requirements disclosures are there since 200 years ago. Maybe carbon disclosure should be made compulsory, at least in Malaysia. Do you feel that is the way forward, at least in trying to capture the non-listed companies?
Yeah, I think it is an important area to have a very comprehensive discussion over. But I would sort of like, caution against rushing into this for the sake of just fulfilling a KPI. So, for example, if you look at the EU carbon market trading experience, they gave away too many credits initially, such that the carbon credit market, the pricing was too low. It really didn't make sense for companies to be able to gain from the carbon trading market. So I think Malaysia should learn from the experiences of other countries, and have a much more comprehensive approach so that you know we don't make mistakes from other countries. But I think it's something that we need to get done, hopefully sooner rather than later.
You know, the GEM 2022 report ranks Malaysia right in the middle, which is quite surprising. I would have assumed Malaysia would do rather poorly if compared against other indices. But S&P 50 US, ASX 50, WIG 20, they're all ranked lower than Malaysia. Does this kind of finding surprise you? Do you feel that FVMKLCI is actually doing better than I actually thought of?
Not really. I think, again, because this is a measure of transparency, so I think many, because of Bursa's efforts, many companies have already, started the ESG reporting and disclosure process. I think the sort of like awareness is actually very high, including on SDG-related goals. It's a journey that was started quite some time back. And I think the challenge for Malaysian companies, especially the listed ones, would be to up their game in terms of greater transparency, greater disclosures, and then also linking these disclosures to the larger corporate strategy so that this is these kinds of disclosures can be seen as something that will benefit the long-term value, the long-term growth of these companies, and also obviously benefit their shareholders and stakeholders as well.
All right. As I alluded to earlier, there are two big areas I want to explore. The first, of course, regulatory requirement and policy. The second is financial inducement or incentive. Some banks, I don't want to mention names, but they have introduced products that will provide loans to businesses that provide greater disclosure on ESG. Do you feel that this is a great way to induce companies to either disclose better their ESG practices or at least show to the relevant stakeholders, banks included, on their commitment on ESG practices? Do you think that this is the way to go, financial inducing?
Yeah, I think that's a good start. And I have a little bit of familiarity in this area as well. For example, I know that some banks in Malaysia have offered very attractive terms for the installment of solar PVs, for example. So these days, most consumers can actually get these solar PVs installed, almost debt-free. The risk will be undertaken by the solar PV installers, they get good funding from banks. And I think banks also recognize that this is their own ESG contribution that's good for the environment, and also importantly, it's also financially sustainable. So having this kind of best of both worlds, I think, is the approach to go when it comes to financing different ESG initiatives.
Okay. Final area here is on the issue of moving forward. Do you feel that the ESG practices for 2023 is actually gaining momentum, particularly among corporates of SMEs? Do you feel that this is an area of concern for them, or do you think that bottom line and cash flow is still the main concern or consideration for these kind of companies?
I think the really forward companies, especially those who are listed, look at ESG disclosure and requirements as part and parcel of their larger corporate strategy. So like I said earlier, it will be good for growth and profits in the long run. Although in the short run, there may be some transition costs that these players have to play. I think the challenge for Malaysia and probably for other countries as well, and this was indicated in the ESG report, that the monitoring of the supply chain, that means you're talking about smaller SMEs that supply to these larger companies, is still relatively weak in the Malaysian context. If let's say more of this kind of monitoring with the proper incentives given by these large companies and also by the government, you'll be able to get more of the smaller players to get onto the ESG bandwagon as a way to strengthen their business offerings moving forward, not something that is seen as merely a cost in terms of compliance.
Right now, Kian Ming, when we talk about innovation strategy, there's a quadruple helix model where government, academia, industry and community works hand in hand in trying to push forward an agenda. You are quietly situated in a unique position where you actually occupy three positions previously and currently: academia, government and community. Do you feel that academia, community and government needs to improve on their involvement in ESG practices and disclosure with industry moving forward? You can't just leave this to just these companies alone, am I right?
Yeah, exactly. So in my position as somebody who has recently rejoined academia, I see the student as well as academic community playing an important role. In terms of research, there are certain things that on the research agenda with regards to ESG compliance and also innovation that academics can undertake. And then at the same time, in terms of what students can do, their impact on the community, which is what Taylor's is trying to do through these impact labs that was recently introduced, to really gain awareness for themselves on what ESG initiatives are and how these can be undertaken at the community level so that these things can be institutionalized, they can grow, they can gain more traction, and then it'll be part and parcel of the larger landscape in institutions of higher learning all around the country.
Okay, Kian Ming, your personal wish on this, do you think that being the director of PPE at Taylor's is going to improve on trying to give out policies when it comes to ESG practices?
I hope that Taylor's through this PPE program can build a new generation of leaders who are multidisciplinary in their inclination and training, and that ESG would be part and parcel of their training so that when they become corporate as well as political leaders and community leaders in the future, they would be able to incorporate this kind of training to up the ante with regards to ESG initiatives in the country and also beyond.
Thank you very much. That was Dr. Ong Kian Ming, Director of PPE, which is Philosophy, Politics and Economics Program at Taylor's University, joining us. He was also the former MP of Bangi.